welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. Well, you guys are in for a treat today. And I really believe that every Sunday, that it's always going to be the best message of my life. But I believe it again today, right? It's a miracle. It happens over and over again. Because today we're continuing a series called What's the Deal With? And the whole concept of the series is there's things that were handed to us or things that we picked up along the way. We thought about culture. We thought about relationships, love, pleasure, cooking, what we think about God, what we think about philosophy. And we're like, oh, yeah, everyone just, like, thinks this way. Everyone just knows that this is what we do. And if you, like, actually take time to think about, like, why is there so much violence in the Bible? Is that, like, God, like, is a violent God? Why did God have to, kill Jesus? Was that, like, how it worked? And once you start, like, asking those questions, and you can move away the fear of being certain, and you can move into a place of, like, why can't we just, like, raise our hands? Why can't we just say, that's a little interesting? Because it can lead you into these wild places of new discoveries and this benevolent God and this benevolent universe. And today we're talking about your favorite subject. Let's see if I got it right here. Is what's the deal with prophecy? Yes. Aren't you so glad that you woke up? You're like, you know what I really need? I need to hear about prophecy. Right. So before we get into why we're talking about prophecy, who would like to give me, how would you define it? Like if a five-year-old walked up to you and said, all right, old man or old lady or old person, what's the deal with prophecy? You would say, yeah, anyone could say it. This is the open conversation. Well, how would you define prophecy? You're like, I want to say something, he's going to mock me publicly. I promise I won't for too long, all right? Michael, how would you define prophecy since it's your first time here? Insightful knowing of the future. That's a very insightful answer. I like that. Okay? Anyone else? How would you define it? Something foretold. Okay? The dictionary's definition is just a prediction. Right? But the way we think about prophecy, if you were like me, raised in the charismatic evangelical movement, and even if you're not, even if you're just like an observer of it, prophecy is more of a prediction and it's more of a fortune telling. Is how a lot of people think about it. As in, like, what was the famous prophet's name? The Nostradamus? Right? Of, like, I'm going to predict things that will happen in the future, not 10, not 20 years, but maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of years. So when people think about Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, or the prophet Isaiah, and he says, by his stripes we should be healed, we use that as a way of talking about Good Friday, of Jesus being whipped. Was Isaiah talking and had insight and knowledge of what was going to happen, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ahead of him? I would say no. And a lot of biblical scholars would say no, because that's not how prophecy always works. But when you think prophecy is fortune-telling, like the book of Revelation is this wild book, and there's people who make millions of dollars off telling you this book is predicting the future. And prophecy is not, biblical prophecy is not this fortune-telling. It is this truth revealing of something that is current. So, before we get into, oh, it's so rich. Has anyone ever had like a prophetic experience? Like someone said, I have a word of God for you. I'm not going to ask you to share what it is. But has anyone ever gotten one? All right, hold up. Was it positive? Did anyone have a positive one? You had a positive one? I had like a life-changing one. And like in the charismatic experience, and charismatic just means charismatics believe in the power or the spirit of God, and where supernatural healings, words of wisdom, prophecy, resurrecting the dead is in there. That you believe that there's God that will give certain people or everyone gifts to edify the church. That's Paul in 1 Corinthians 12. It's like the whole point. So I was raised in this tradition of like, oh, prophecy is super weird and very awkward, but I think that's just how it's supposed to be. And as a teenager, I went to this place called the Gospel Tabernacle, which should give away what kind of, just by the name, all right? And in it, there is this person that would stand, that we'd all be standing for worship, and one person would just start yelling. They would start yelling words. One person would speak in tongues. That's like, in Acts chapter 2, this idea that you can have like secret, or it's actually using languages you don't understand that you would now understand the language. You can say it, and you're speaking about God. And then, so someone would speak in tongues, and then this person would stand up, and they were a self-proclaimed prophet. And they would interpret what that person said in a different language, and they would just yell it out. And the whole church would just be like, okay, this is cool. We get this. And it was just normal to me. And you'd close your eyes, and you're like, I don't understand what's going on, but I'm just pretending that I do, you know, because you want to fit in as a teenager. And it didn't hit me how weird it was, or not weird, but how different it was, I'll use that word, until I had friends that spent the night on Saturday night, and I would forget that we go to church on Sunday, and they had come, and Justin DeRussia would be like, do I get to yell in church? I got some things to say, right? I'm like, why? And it's like, oh, you know, because they're a prophet. And it's like, well, who decided they're a prophet? And we're like, I think they did, right? And that's how prophecy was really introduced to me. And at that time, it was like more of a magic trick. And when you're a kid, it's like, oh, cool. And I started getting a little into, like, well, what could prophecy be? And then when I got older and I started working at a charismatic evangelical church, prophecy turned into something different, right? Prophecy was really good a majority of the time. I had someone give me a word, and it was about information about me that definitely didn't tell that person or anyone associated with that person, but they knew something about me, and they called it reading your mail. And I saw it happen to other people. I'm like, that's cool, I guess. Maybe it's kind of like a party trick. And when someone did it to me, I'm like, how did they know? And so I believe in this like wild world of there's a loving God who wants nothing but good and beautiful things for us. And I can't explain why all the things that happen that they happen. I believe in miracles. I'm very cynical and very suspicious of them. I believe in prophecy. I'm very suspicious and very cynical of it because of my trauma and the way that it was used against me. And I think that's an appropriate response of like God can do some amazing things, but what for what purpose? Because the prophecy, like I shared this on social media, but the way that prophecy that started to turn in a way, I was like, I don't like this, is I worked for a pastor that said that God told them who was doing their devotions every day, like on staff. There was probably about 15 people on staff, and they would say, yeah, God tells me who's their devotion. And the devotions for those of us heathens out there, right? Devotion is just like you take time to read your Bible and you pray or you meditate, and that would like center you to be on mission with what God is doing. And when that person said that to me, instead of it being encouraging, it scared me. Because like if God is telling this pastor what we are doing in the morning, do they know what we're doing the night before? You know, is God telling them that right? At least for me, that was a natural next step. If God is giving you inside information about what I'm reading, why wouldn't God give you inside information about what is detrimental? What I believe is hidden sin, that I'm afraid of anyone finding out. Like, to this day, there's times I feel like people are going to pull back the curtain and say, Chris is a fraud. We knew it all along. And so the idea of, like, God doing that, or God pointing to where the curtain is so that this pastor could do it. And so I avoided that person just in the mornings, right? It's like, if I didn't read except if I read my Bible, I'd be walking right in his office, hello, mister, how we doing, right? And it wasn't till way, way too long after in therapy that I was able to like process this. And the therapist, they didn't laugh at me. I thought they would laugh at me. And what they said was, that's just a narcissism trick. Because, of course, if you center the narcissist's pleasure or ego or power, of course you're in the will of God. Of course you're in the mandate of heaven. Because that narcissist would say, you agree with me, you're centering me, you're not challenging me, you must have done your devotions today because God is speaking to you. Because when God speaks for me, that means it's good for everybody. This is, if you've ever worked with a narcissist, married to a narcissist, right? Or you are a narcissist, this might be alarming to you. It was not about God. So then what is prophecy? And how can we, as in this like progressive, like pluralistic Christian space, how do we use the concept of prophecy? So here's what prophecy is, according to the Bible, right? In the Old Testament, prophets were not the life of the party. They were not like the hip with and wild people. they were the people that would show up and be like, you guys remember on SNL, Debbie Downer, right? Like the wah-wah, right? That prophets were that way because they were just truth tellers. They would walk up and say, hey, we made this covenant with God. There's this this beautiful God that said that it's going to do these things if we do these things, like the Ten Commandments and a whole lot of other things. And if we stay true to these, then God is going to give us everything that we need. And when they would veer off from that, the prophets would show up and speak on the behalf of God, and they would essentially have a mirror and just hold it up to people and say, is this who you always dreamed of becoming? You think you're this. You think you're wonderful. You think you're powerful. You think you can know who's doing devotions in the morning. But really all you're doing is centering your power and your ego on other people's bodies and calling that God. And that, my friend, is taking the Lord's name in vain, breaking one of the Ten Commandments. And so when that would happen, there would be curses, or there'd be bad things that would happen. And the prophet's job was to show up and just speak truth to power. And in the Old Testament, it was always towards vulnerable people. It was always about justice. And it was about bringing people back into this flourishing relationship with God, each other, oneself, and the earth. Always. That's what it was always about. It wasn't about fortune telling. It was about we can make decisions. We can do a better job in this generation. Maybe the next generation. It was not hundreds or thousands of years, these prophecies. It was like a year, maybe a decade, maybe a little bit more. Because it was about bringing people back to flourishing now. Right? We get this idea of God is trying to get us all into heaven. And what Jesus did is saying, no, heaven is like already in. And I want you to wake to the reality of that heaven's right here. We don't need to think about thousands of years. You need to think about now. What does it look like to love your neighbor as you love yourself? So, of course, if anyone's ever confronted you, if you are in a relationship with someone and they said, hey, do you think we could talk? And you're like, okay, are we getting divorced? Did I do anything horrible, right? And there's like this idea of being found out. And that's why people didn't really like prophets, because they would reveal what really is. Then there's prophets in the New Testament, right? And prophecy then was centered around the idea of Jesus being this Messiah. And what Paul says, like I already mentioned in 1 Corinthians, is that prophecy along with wisdom and healing and the apostle and teaching is this idea of making the community as Jesus-looking as possible. And prophecy, or truth-telling, was helping redirect people, power, or power structures towards being a Jesus-looking community. And so what we're going to read here is in Ezekiel, and this is so good. This is, Ezekiel is this prophet, and he is speaking to the Hebrew people, and it's around the time of the exile of the Babylonians come, and or the Syrians come, and they wage war, and they're like, hey, big fan of whatever's happening with you and your God, but like you're now with us, and all your stuff comes with us. And they put them in exile. They ruin Jerusalem, and they bring them back into Babylonian, where they have to, the Hebrew people, with a whole pluralistic way of thinking about religion, culture, and belonging, they're in this like eclectic group, which is this horrible story of exile and this beautiful story of people trying to reimagine what God and community can look like under oppression. It's rich. And so Ezekiel is speaking to this group of people around this time, and this is, oh, I have it up there actually, so you guys know that I'm actually using the Bible. All right, here we go. This is Ezekiel 18, and this is what Ezekiel says. The word of the Lord came to me. What do you people mean by quoting the proverb about the land of Israel? The parents eat sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, you will no longer quote this proverb in Israel. For everyone belongs to me, the parent as well as the child. Both alike belong to me. The one who sins is the one who will die. That would be a great verse to put on your pillow, on your couch, right? That last one, the one who sins is the one who will die. Put that in your kid's bedroom like, I didn't say it, guys. I'm sorry, all right? This chapter and this verse in the Bible, to get into like nerdy Bible like stuff, this is monumental. This is like earth shattering, because what is happening is these people are saying, why if my parents are eating the sour grape, why as a kid or as a grandkid or as a great-grandkid is my teeth still on edge? Why am I still tasting the bitterness of something someone ate long ago? And what they're referring to is they are crying out to God In Leviticus, or I don't remember if Leviticus or Deuteronomy, God says, if you break these commandments, you break these covenants, then you will be cursed, and for 4 to 5 generations, you will carry on that curse as well. Right? That sounds intense. That sounds intense. But what's hidden in the weird, odd, violent language is there God saying, I've heard your cries. And a prophet shows up to say, hey, guys, God heard your cry asking for justice. And so if prophecy is always about vulnerable people, how does this play out? Because you can imagine if your great-grandpa decided to worship an idol, right? And idol worship would have been incredibly common. Why? Because this is a nomadic society. This is an ancient civilization that's in a host of other ancient civilizations that's trying to survive. And so if they have a god of rain or sun and their crops are growing, you might get in your head of like, oh, this new technology you're using, maybe this will help me. And now, that doesn't make it all right, but you can see how they might look to beg, borrow, and steal in order to survive. So they do this, and God says, ooh, remember we talked about that? Now there's a curse, not just on that person, but on their kids, great-grandkids, great-grandkids, great-great-grandkids. And if you're one of those great-grandkids, and you've been marked as cursed, you've been marked as other, you've been marked as less than, you can imagine how other people might see you as well and how you see yourself. If you're like, I am cursed, and if you've ever been a teenager and you've all of a sudden decided, like, no one's ever going to love me, and then you spend like half a day just living in your basement, in your bedroom, just crying yourself, right? You have that self-fulfilled prophecy of no one's ever going to love me. Can you imagine what that would feel like for generations? To look at your kid and say, I'm sorry, you're the fourth generation. You have to carry on the same trajectory we've had. It can give you permission to think or do horrible things about yourself. Think about the other people in the community who know that you're cursed or less than. We don't do that today. Never. Never would we mark in culture people who might be different or different demographics of people being less than or more than. Right? We don't do that based on people's body type, the color of the hair, if they went to school, what school they went to, how much money they make. Like we drive this horrible van. I love it. We call it the tank, right? It's got 300,000 miles on it, and I want to drive it until it blows. I want to drive it right before it blows up, right? And one of my kids said, well, Dad, aren't you, like, embarrassed? I'm like, embarrassed? Do you know what kind of cars I grew up driving? All right, those were like Rolls Royce compared to this van, because in our family system, the car wasn't a symbol of our status. It was a vehicle to get us. I mean, now it is for my parents; they drive beautiful cars, right? But for us schlubs, right? It's a way of getting point A to point B. And if people want to judge me for that, I'm really okay with that. So take that projected times 1,000 of people living under this idea of a curse. And now God hears the prayers. Prophet shows up and says, hey, you heard it this way? Now there's a new way of being. And Freudian slip. God says, the one who sins is the one who will die. And if you go further on, it talks about the ones who do good are the ones who will live. Now the sins of the father no longer carry on to the sins of the son or the daughter. And this is huge because this is one of many examples that God changes their mind. Does God change its mind? Or do we change our mind of what we think God is? So does God change or do we change? That's a theological, philosophical conundrum, right? And for me, as a process, theology-informed person, I'd say, yeah, both. That I do believe that God evolves and grows in real time, discovering with us. And some people are, and you don't have to believe that to be here, right? But what that means is like, change and adaption, evolution in every aspect of life is just a part of life, right? And if we're made in the image of God and change and growth and adaption and pivoting and all those things is just a part of normal life, it's a part of science, part of technology, part of culture, part of art, it's going to pivot and evolve, why wouldn't that be also in God's nature? And why is that such a threat? And if we take the Bible seriously, clearly God says, I used to curse. And now I'm saying that death will only be attached to one person instead of generations. Here's a prophet not speaking to hundreds of years, is saying there's a whole new way of thinking about not just God, but how we engage with this God and how we engage with one another, how we engage with the community, how we engage about life. This is so incredibly important. Why? Because prophecy we need today. Do you know who I call prophets? I call stand-up comedians prophets. It's true, right? They say, I'm not supposed to swear, I've been told. So they say things that we might all think, and they have a way of saying it out loud in a way that makes us laugh, but all of a sudden it's like, I never thought about that, right? Some of it is using racist language. Some of it's using different demographics. But it's a way of getting our attention, getting us on edge to think the process. Yeah, why do we just assume it has to be like that? So prophecy is still needed today. So I have a couple tips for you, only two, then I have a series of questions, and then we'll be done. The first is this. If we want to be truth tellers, that's what I think prophecy is. First thing is we have to be awake. And I use this all the time because we can get to good ideas, and here's all the things we want to do, but if we are not paying attention, then we might just do things like, oh, this sounds like it's good, instead of trying to speak truth to power. So being awake does not mean you have to be on Twitter and be in all these Twitter like battles over and over again. Does not mean that you're on CNN or whatever news station you want 24 hours a day. Doesn't mean you have to be a news or political junkie. What it means is be conscious of what is getting your heart. And what's getting your heart might be what brings you joy. It might be what just tears you up inside. And both might prompt you to do something about it. And so some of you might feel, I can think of two people that are very invested in the Ukraine war and how they have nonstop, like when it first started, like Stand With Ukraine, these two families are doing what they can to bring attention and money and energy to what's happening over in Ukraine. It might be of you feel, I feel very passionate about access to women's healthcare, access for trans people to have healthcare. It might be the local school board. It might be your middle, your management group at work. It might be planning what's going to happen for the next family reunion. Whatever gets your attention, whatever gets your grief or your joy, be awake to it and process with a friend or yourself, with God, of do I feel the Spirit prompting me to do anything? So the first is you have to be awake. And the second one is you don't have to change the world in one act. Truth-telling might be sitting down with your counselor and practicing that conversation you're going to have with your parents. It might be sitting down with a friend that you haven't seen for a little bit and asking them, what changed? Why did we stop connecting? Why did you stop calling me? It might be calling up and sending a letter to your state senator. It might be showing up and having coffee with the mayor. Like, where can you speak truth where you're going to be heard? It might be social media, right? It might be. It could be. It could be a place to start. But do something. If you feel prompted, you feel something is happening in the universe that you're like, I just can't sit back anymore, it might be wearing a pin. Like the amount of conversations I've had when with this on my water bottle or on another hat I wear, I have the pin, people stop and ask me, what's the N in the pride flag? Like, and I get to talk about why that's so important to us. So be awake and do something. Try something. Because when we move in truth and we speak truth to power, right, that's how we see change. That's how we see flourishing. But here's three series of questions. And you can write these down. I can hand them to you later if you'd like. They are, I think they're brilliant. It's this. The first one is this. Is this voice aligned with the biblical call to justice, especially for the vulnerable? Is it courageous, but not self-serving? And that last line, to me, is the most important. Yes, is it courageous, but is the power and attention and energy and whatever benefit just coming right back to me? Then that might not fall in line with this prophecy idea of what prophecy is. Number two, does it edify the community, call it towards healing, truth and transformation, and does it resonate with the Spirit revealed in Christ, one of compassion, humility, and boundary-breaking love? And last one, is it open to dialogue? Does it leave room for correction, evolution, and mutual listening? And most of all, does it invite us into a deeper connection with each other, with creation, and with the sacred. And as you're thinking about how do I make a change, how do I make a difference, how do I speak truth to power, these questions, at least from when I read them, I'm like, oh man, I wish like 30-year-old Chris could have heard these questions of things I tried that I was passionate about that I think we need to change, maybe wasn't the most life-giving way. But if we are willing to be awake and move towards justice and move towards those marginalized and not let it be self-serving and it's open for dialogue and it's pointless to be Jesus-looking people, I think the places that we're in can be a better place. So let me pray. And if you'd like to process, you'd like to chat, you'd like to pray, I'll be here for a long time. So please, let's pray. So God, thank you for being so incredibly good. And I love the idea of that in the Bible we see either the people or a God that's willing to hear better, know better, and do better. That in our own sacred scripture there is evolution and transformation. And so I ask God that we can be a community of people that is aware of what's happening, but we can be a part of that transformation through speaking the truth. And you give us the wisdom and the moxie to not just see the problems and complain about the problems, but that wisdom and that moxie, that fire, that energy, that prompting of what we can do about it. And I thank you for the truth tellers in our communities that have gone to power, have gone to the committees, have gone to management, have gone to places to create policies in order to have a more equitable and inclusive community. So God, use us. Well, thank you, friends, for being in this space with me at Neighborhood Church. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.